Please stand by. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, extending SOA and CICS with Web 2.0. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how, with the recently delivered support pack CA8K, you can use existing CICS web support facilities to deliver ATOM feeds containing data from CICS. The speaker for today's teleconference is Peter Haberkin, CICS Software Development Programmer. At this time, I'd like to turn things over to Peter. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I'm Peter Haberkin, talking to you from Hursley Laboratory in England, and I'm talking to you today about extending SOA and CICS with Web 2.0. Let's look up page 2, which is an important disclaimer. Please read this now. It effectively says that nothing in this presentation is to be regarded as any IBM commitment or liability. Let's move straight on to the presentation. Web 2, everybody's talking about it these days. So what is it? Well, it's why the Internet is so exciting today for everybody. And it comes in these three flavors, really a set of economic, social, and technology trends that collectively form the basis of the next generation of the Internet. This is words from O'Reilly, who really invented the term. So Web 2.0 is a term that captures this widespread sense that there's something qualitatively different about today's web. So what does it mean in terms of kicks? We want to talk in this presentation about Web 2 concepts such as clean and meaningful URLs, RESTful access to KIX resources, access via AJAX, syndication and aggregation of RSS and ATOM, and mashups. But KIX is not likely to be directly concerned with the social networking aspects of Web 2.0. So on page 5, URLs and RESTful and tagging, what do all these things mean? Clean and meaningful URLs for everything. Well, most people by now know what a URL is. Sometimes the more academic places on the web will describe URLs as URIs, the Uniform Resource Identifiers. But most people know them as URLs, Universal Resource Locators. And generally, a locator means that you can actually download or upload to a fixed location on the Internet. One of the concepts of Web 2.0 is that everything that you can touch has a URL. So the sort of things we can talk about are files and databases and TSQs and KIX. Each of those can have a URL, and within those resources, each single record may have a separate URL. So you can uniquely identify by means of a URL any of those objects, files, records, whatever. Now, the concept of REST, R-E-S-T, stands for Representational State Transfer, and it's a new style of operation in which you can interact with URLs in a programmatic way over HTTP. And there's a description there that I've given you a link to on Wikipedia. So really, there's nothing new about this. It's how the web has always worked. The HTTP methods, first of all, is GET, where you download a new page, and then POST, where you upload a form. But this has been extended now with other HTTP methods called PUT and DELETE. So these four HTTP methods, they've been there since HTTP has been invented, but they've really only got traction and focus since these Web 2 concepts came about. So those four verbs are the only verbs you'll ever need using RESTful interfaces. And just as I described about URLs, everything else in REST is a resource. So it's a representation of its state. And we hear about different representations, maybe an HTML representation, maybe an XML representation, and maybe a natural graphical representation. So maybe the same object is represented in many different ways. And the representational state transfer is the transfer between these things. Once you've invented a URL for everything, that means you can put the things out on the web and people can actually tag and refer to them. And tagging in the Web 2 world is sort of called remembering in public, so people can actually produce public references to your URLs and maybe provide references and scoring for them. You can associate audience-defined terms, that's the sort of tag or category, to things that consist of dynamic collections, which will be the resources you're actually exposing over these Web 2 interfaces. Now, in the web services world, you're probably already familiar with SOAP. So this slide, slide 6, gives a comparison of REST over HTTP against SOAP over HTTP. So in REST, all the objects have a URI or a URL, as I said before, and all the operations on those objects are done through the four defined HTTP methods of POST, GET, PUT, and DELETE. And that's different from SOAP over HTTP, where the objects that you manipulate are actually embedded inside a SOAP message, and the operations that you perform upon those are also embedded in the SOAP message. They typically have a URI or a verb within the message that has a namespace associated with the URI. So really, you have to look inside the message before you decide what sort of operation you're going to do. And another downside, if you like, of SOAP is that it only uses the HTTP POST method. That is a bit firewall unfriendly. It's nice for a firewall manager to understand exactly what sort of operations are flowing through the firewall. REST is a bit more hygienic about that because it actually gives the intent of the verb, whereas because SOAP only uses the one, it's a bit difficult without decoding the SOAP message to understand what the SOAP message is actually going to do. I also mentioned AJAX, so what's that? AJAX is an acronym for Asynchronous JavaScript and XML. As many of these acronyms are invented for one purpose, they actually turn out meaning something else. So although you can use AJAX for asynchronous JavaScript and XML, you can also use it for synchronous non-JavaScript and non-XML applications as well. So that's how the acronym came about, but for actual practical use, you just say it's AJAX. So what is it? It's a technology that's mainly used inside web browsers as user interface technology. So JavaScript is the main driver of it, but it's been spruced up in some new clothes, effectively. It's got some new functions that can interact between the script running in the client, so this is running inside the browser, and that interacts directly with the server from which that script has been downloaded. So it allows a more responsive user interface for web applications, and they behave more like a locally installed desktop application. Because the script is acting interactively, the script is working on your behalf in the browser, and when it needs data out from the server, it just goes and gets it asynchronously. So asynchronous is the key distinguishing feature. So while your script is running, HTTP requests are then sent to the server asynchronously, and they're not, as it were, in direct response to normal web page requests. So the old technology, as it were, the Web 1 technology, you download a page, you feed some data into it, like a form, and then you press a button, and the data gets uploaded, and you then move on to a new page. With AJAX, what actually happens is that you dynamically update parts of the page, so the main page stays where it is, and you may dynamically change elements within that page after interaction with the server. So as a result of that, there are few, if any, whole page requests anymore. You may stay on the same page for a long time and interact with that page between your client interactions, your clicks, and your keyboard interaction and the server. So that means there's lots of smaller requests, but happening more often. Moving on, one of the other concepts of Web 2, quite a powerful one, is this concept of syndication. And it comes in two flavors, RSS and ATOM. So it's really about publishing short items of text, such as news headlines, or you might think in the system status changes, or adding of new customer records to a file, or dot, 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 anything you can think of that really short and snappy, something that you want to monitor that your client has introduced, but not necessarily huge, great rafts of text. So there's two ways of operating this. You can either have the client in a web browser, and the major browsers now have syndication clients within them, or you can actually have independent client programs that you download on your desktop, which are dedicated feed aggregators. And the two main syndication flavors are RSS, which is very popular and well-known, and everyone tends to think in terms of syndication being RSS, so people will talk about RSS feeds as a generic. It is very popular, but it's been implemented in rather an ad hoc way. There's some several disparate implementations of this, not all of them intercompatible. So ATOM is now an emerging standard. So it's meant to take the best of RSS and put it into an international standard. So the interfaces that are part of ATOM have now been defined into RFCs. These are requests for comments, which are generally the way in which internet standards are introduced to the community. Move on then onto page 9. Quite a lot of the rest of this presentation will talk about ATOM. So in effect, we're ignoring RSS because of its shortcomings and the fact that it may well be superseded by ATOM in the next few years. So most of my focus will be on ATOM. Now, although it's a syndication feed, technology, because you've actually defined within ATOM protocol a representation of interactions in XML, it can also be the basis for other Web2 technologies such as mashups, already feed aggregators I mentioned, and also blogs. They all support ATOM, and increasing amounts of support will become available for the ATOM technologies. So ATOM itself comes in two levels of complexity, and it's corresponding to the two RFCs in which its specification is defined. So RFC 4287 is called the ATOM syndication format. It was published in 2005. It mainly talks about feeds and entries, and it's targeted at producing feeds for aggregators. But RFC 5023, called the ATOM Publishing Protocol, which is published last year in 2007, it has objects in its specification called services and collections, and it's really about a bit wider than simple feeds. It's really targeted at creating and updating resources, which has several resonances with the way we want to work with KIX. So just to summarize Web 2, how far we got at the moment, mainly about more dynamic forms of web interactions, also known as rich internet applications, such as mashups, which are the content from multiple servers all composed onto a single web page. Mashups use AJAX, which is this XML HTTP request, the function that's embedded within JavaScript to do the asynchronous access. An archetypal example of a mashup is the Google Maps application, where you dynamically interact with a map. As you interact with it, you move bits of new map onto the image of the map that you've just moved away. So as you scroll to the right, bits of map appear on the left, and so on. And each of those interactions is done over AJAX, downloading a small amount of image on to complete the existing map as you interact with it. Syndications, as I said, are a menu of short messages, possibly linking to other content. And another possible application of this is a sort of podcast, which is a form of syndication. Another interesting idea is that blogs or online weblogs or online diaries, which can possibly be collaborative, these are actually handled through the syndication format. So you can actually interact with a blog and update data to it and download data and edit it by using an ATOM interaction. So once you've done ATOM, you've probably done lots of these other Web2 technologies as well. So having had that whistle-stop tour of Web2 technologies, how do we start introducing Web2 into CICS? Why do you want to do Web2 in KIX, and why in particular now? Well, Web2.0 is clearly a very important new style of accessing data, and KIX has always tried to keep up with the latest methods of interaction with itself. So there is a potential to unlock data that's currently stored inside CICS. Many people say that there's lots of data out there on KIX files or in KIX applications. Wouldn't it be nice if we could just expose that out on the internet without having to write any new applications? Well, some of the technologies we've introduced into CICS over the last few releases have helped you to do that, but this is another step down the way to use this new, mainly ATOM interactions to do exactly that. So, as an organization, CICS development want to show that KIX has indeed an interest in this technology. And so we want to gauge customer interest in it by shipping a support pack. This is an early piece of code. It's not part of the main product that you can download. And the purposes of this are really to demonstrate the feasibility of this technology, to test the market. And when people do that, we will wish to gather user feedback on what's right with the support pack and what's wrong with it. So the support pack is called CA8K, and it's targeted at delivering ATOM feeds. It runs on KIX Transaction Server 3.1 and 3.2. It's available now. It was released at the end of March this year. You can download it from ibm.com/KIX/support-packs. Be warned, though, that it does need a prerequisite APAR, the development type APAR, PK58721. So on page 14, I describe the design objectives of this support pack. So the idea is that we shall expose parts of KIX resource as ATOM entries, so that you can expose the whole KIX resource as a feed, and each individual record or queue item or a range of records within the KIX resource is regarded as an ATOM entry. An ATOM entry is the smallest piece of data that you can ship over the ATOM interface. So remember that we said that URLs are everywhere and that you use URLs to represent resources. Well, you select the portion of the resource in this case by using the URL query string. So if we have, for instance, a URL that describes Kix file slash file A, it's followed by a query string, question mark S equals 6666, and this implies that you're reading the record from the file with that key, and the S equals is really just meant to be a selector value in a non-generic way. So the design objective is to provide a RESTful interface. Remember, we talked about RESTful representational state transfer. And this new acronym I'll introduce, of CRUD, which is a real acronym that's used in these contexts, believe me. And it's just an abbreviation of create, read, update, and delete. So these are the operations that you typically do on databases and files. So in the HTTP RESTful interactions, these four operations are mapped into the four HTTP methods. So create operation is mapped into the post HTTP method, and you would typically implement that by means of say on in Kix, so something like a write file. Likewise, the read CRUD operation would be implemented by the get HTTP method, which would typically do a read file. The update operation would be implemented as a put HTTP method using a read file for update followed by a rewrite file, and delete obviously is implemented by delete. Now, there's one slight thing that needs to be noticed about the read for update or the put operation. Whereas in a normal Kix transaction, you would want to do a read for update followed by a write. You would not want to do that in the sort of timescales that are involved in a web interaction. So you wouldn't want to be able to hold a read for update lock, for instance, between an HTTP get and an HTTP put. So fortunately, the designers of HTTP had the prevision to know that this would be a problem, so they invented a technique called conditional put, and this has been implemented in the support pack. So the idea is that the get, when you do a get to retrieve a piece of information, it returns an HTTP etag header, and the etag value is a unique identification of the actual response instance that you've returned. So although the URL for a particular record is unique, each time you return that record, if its value has been updated, the etag value, the response instance, may have changed. So in the general way of expressing this, the etag could be something like a very accurate timestamp, or it could be an accurate sequence number, the actual number of times a request has been made to this file since it was installed, or in fact, the way that it's implemented in the support pack, it could be checksum of the actual value in the record. So the idea is that however you do it, you create this etag value as a unique identifier. Then that's returned to the client who does the get. Then when that same client wants to do a put to update the record that he's just read, he sends exactly the same etag value in an HTTP header called ifmatch. Then if the resource has changed since the get was done, then the server, in this case CICS, returns an HTTP response of 412, which is a precondition failed, and the resource is not updated, so the put fails. If, however, the record has not changed, since the put is now valid and it's not trying to update stale data, then the update gets done. So this concept has been embedded into the support pack, so you can just use it, and you don't need to do the worrying about the read for update holding a lock over a long period. Moving on to slide 17. Now, when you actually request data from CICS, you're going to be requesting it in XML, but the actual data on your Kix resource, on your TSQ or your file, is actually going to be in binary data. So the data from Atom is character-based. So if you're sending a put or post request, for instance, you'll be sending some XML containing character data. The data in the CICS resource is binary or packed decimal or something like that. So as you do the move from one environment to the other, you actually need to do a conversion. And so it's bidirectional. You need to do conversion from binary to XML when you're doing a move down to the client, and you need to do a conversion from XML up to binary when you're doing a put or a post, moving data up from the client to the Kix server. Now, this is very similar to a problem that we've already encountered in the standard Kix web services support, where, in fact, you're interacting with COM areas and web services when you're doing SOAP messages to COM area transformations. So we need to do a similar approach to that doing our Atom feed management. So let's have an overview of the design here. The design uses the existing RDO resource of a pipeline. And as I said in my introduction, we want to demonstrate that Web2 2.0 support can be done using existing Kix web support. So there's nothing new here, just that everything in the support pack is really application level code. There's nothing that's been changed inside CSS. One thing that we do though, that's different from, say, our existing web services support, that we exploit the ZOS XML system services, which is an inbuilt XML parser that's now built into the ZOS operating system. It's namespace aware, so it handles namespace prefix and namespace URIs. It is available on ZOS 1.7 with APAR UA 31443 and also on later releases of ZOS. So this, unlike some of the XML toolkit technology that we used for web services in early releases, there aren't any open source licensing issues, so you can just use the XML system parser. It's already there on your operating system, and the support pack will use that. So here's graphically on page 19 a picture of how you might map your Atom request into a CICS resource. So remember, everything is described as URLs. So the first time that CICS sees the inbound URL, it looks at it and it examines it using a URI map, Kix resource, which was new in version 3. So it looks at the URL. Do you typically have a wildcard in your path statement, like it ends in an asterisk, so that it can manage several different flavors of URL and map them on to a pipeline definition? So the URI map says usage equals pipeline, and it refers to a pipeline definition. Then the pipeline definition itself has a configuration file shown as /x/config/fail-a in this case. And one of the nice things about pipeline configuration files is that they can contain a handler parameter list that is effectively a customization of your own XML. You can write your own XML and do your own self-configuration. So the support pack does this. So the handler parameter list inside the pipeline configuration file actually contains a whole representation of the Atom feed. So it uses the Atom feed XML markup. You see there, this may be a little small to read, but so there's an Atom feed XML LNS equals the namespace for Atom, which is w3.org/2005/Atom. And that means that everything beginning with Atom belongs to the Atom namespace. And then further on down the configuration, we have a CICS resource tag, which describes the Kix resource that corresponds to the feed. So you notice that inside the Atom definition, there's an Atom link with rel equals self and href equals a partial URL. And this is the key element within the Atom part of the configuration file. By looking at the href section of that link element, we mapped that against the inbound URL so that we can decide what sort of thing to be exposed as the Atom feed. So it's only if the Atom link rel equals self href actually matches the inbound URL that we then apply the other characteristics about the Kix resource, which in this case it shows you a name of atomic Kix and the type of TSQ. So what this is trying to do is it's saying when you receive a URL of the form at the top of the page, then go through those linkages through the URI map, through the config file, through the Atom link rel equals self, and then finally that means associate that with a CICS resource, which is in this case type equals TSQ and name equals atomic test. Below that there's another element called the layout tag, which I'll describe in a moment. So here's a more detailed look at the pipeline configuration file. So in the black you have the configuration data that the pipeline needs, like provider pipeline and terminal handler. And terminal handler has a program, and the program name is $W2FD, and that is a program that's provided as a pipeline terminal handler for the purposes of this support pack. So $W2FD is actually the feed handler, and it will handle the relationship between the Atom feed management and the Kix relation, so the Kix resource management. So then the handler parameter list then has this Kix feed element inside it, which actually describes the configuration data for the Kix side of the feed. So we have on page 21 now, we described the Kix feed data, so the Kix feed tag or element with its own namespace, and it has the Atom feed embedded within it, and that's the metadata for the feed. So that contains much of the markup described in the RFC for Atom. Then we have the Kix resource tag, with the name and type of the Kix resource you want to identify. Then there's another element called Kix field names. Obviously, the data that you want to expose over the Atom interface contains variable fields that the metadata inside the configuration file is not quite dynamic enough to sort out. So there's several fields like the actual ID of the Atom record itself, the date stamp, which was last updated, called updated, and the title and the subtitle and possibly the summary. So what the Kix field names element is trying to do is to relate elements within your Kix logical record, the actual database or file or TSQ record, match the contents of those and to return them as effectively inserts into the metadata. So you would be able to override the Atom ID, the updated and title and subtitle and so on in the actual Atom feed that gets returned. Then the Kix layout tag will describe what the actual layout of the Kix resource is. That's the binary representation. Remember I said we had to convert the binary representation of your actual Kix resource into the XML representation that actually has to go out on Atom. So this is expressed in this Kix layout tag, which I'll describe further in a moment. So that's all closed off. It has to be valid XML inside the config file, so you have to close all your tags. As I said earlier, the support pack doesn't use the existing XML services that are already available in web services support. They're too heavily SOAP-oriented, and they're a bit difficult to get at in an application program. They work very well when you are actually doing SOAP and you have a properly configured SOAP pipeline, and some of the Kix supplied services do the right sort of conversions, but as I say, they're a bit difficult to get hold of. So we came up with a new technique for doing this. The Kix resource layout is described within the config file by means of a specification in this language called DFDL, and that's language within the pipeline configuration file. Now, you might not have heard of DFDL before. It's a data format description language. It's a superset of the XML schema language. So schema language is the way in which you actually describe the layout of an XML document and what elements can be present and what the relationship between them is. But DFDL is a superset of that. It's currently being specified by the Open Grid Forum Working Group, and there's a link there at gridforum.org. Now, it's not fully formed yet. The final specification isn't available. So in this support pack, I've just taken some elements from it which make sense, because it is intended to be a representation in XML of how you might describe a binary representation of a record. So it matches, so we use it where it matches our requirements. So here's an example of some DFDL on page 23. So there's the schema language, the XS prefix element, allows you to name a field or an element within an XML document, and you can give it various types like XS byte or XS string. What's new in DFDL is you add extra attributes which are prefixed with the DFDL namespace. So you have, for instance, on the string, you can put DFDL length equals 16, which says this is a string which is exactly 16 bytes long. With type equals XS decimal, you can put DFDL length equals 16, and later on DFDL decimal format equals packed, and DFDL decimal signed equals false. So this says it's an unsigned decimal field of length 16 bytes. And furthermore, with the XS fraction digits parameter, tells you how many actual digits there are, how many decimal places there are in the decimal fraction. So what will happen is that as part of the runtime, when you receive a message from an Atom client, the layout of the message in a put or a post will be interpreted using this schema element, and the L attributes will be used to convert it into the binary form expected by the Kix resource that you're trying to either update or inquire about. Now, out of the box in the support pack, we actually do that conversion dynamically for you for TSQs, but in case you didn't want to update TSQs using Atom services, you may want to do some of your own private database management. So you might want to link to a program of your own. So we do allow you to add a customized service routine. So if the configuration file specifies a Kix resource type of program, the support pack will actually link to that program. And under those circumstances, that program is called a service routine. So information about the Atom feed request will be passed in an Atom parameters container. So just like the other implementations of the pipeline, this will use containers to communicate between the different instances of the programs in the pipeline. So among other things, the atom parameters container will contain record layout information from the configuration file. You don't actually need to understand DFDL language itself, so we will interpret the DFDL language to put it into a binary structure that you can interrogate inside your service routine, and it will be passed to you in the atom parameters container. If the request is a post or a put, that implies that you're actually updating stuff, so that your client is sending you the data that has to be used to update the current record in the resource, then because this is a pipeline, the actual HTTP body will be sent to you in the DFH request container. Now, the responsibilities of your program is to return the actual content part of the ATOM response, the ATOM entry, in a container, which is for this purpose called the ATOM content container. So your only responsibility is to make sure that you return the content. All the rest of the ATOM infrastructure will be returned by the support pack. So just to help you on your way with this service routine, there is a sample service routine provided in the support pack called DFH0W2FA, which as a sample just accesses the sample file A, which is used by other sample utilities, sample transactions in KIX, and it effectively exposes the file A program over a RESTful interface. So I mentioned that we had to provide a prerequisite development type APAR before we could actually make this pipeline support work properly for a RESTful interaction. Although the pipeline support was meant to be a general purpose HTTP handler to work in the general case, it turned out that the pipeline support was very, very SOAP oriented. So although it handled SOAP messages very well using the POST method, when we tried to use it for the GET and DELETE RESTful methods, there were some errors. The pipeline expects a content type header, but of course for a GET or DELETE RESTful interactions, these HTTP methods don't actually provide a request body, so they don't have a content type for it. So the pipeline was expecting something that wasn't in the HTTP protocol. Also, when we returned the message, it was pretty well always assumed that the response was going to be a SOAP. So the media type, which is actually the data type of the message that gets returned, was only either one of the two SOAP protocol media types. Also, it turned out to be difficult to set the required HTTP status codes within the handler application. Again, SOAP either assumed that you were successful getting a 200 response, which is okay, or 500, which indicated you've had an error, and there wasn't anything else in between, whereas the RESTful interactions have a much richer set of HTTP status responses. I've already mentioned the 412, which is used by the conditional put to say that you may or may not have updated the resource. When you do a post and create a new object, you actually get an HTTP status of 201 rather than 200, which is different from the normal HTTP GET, which says you've been successful. When you do a post and you've created a new object, 201 means you've been successful. And there are another sort of few divergences in the handling of KIX Web Support in general for some of the data types that are involved in the new Web 2 technologies, like handling JavaScript and the other data type called JSON, which I don't have time to talk about today. But basically, these are file types that actually represent text data, but because they have an unusual media type, KIX previously has not been able to recognize them as textual and therefore was unable to convert them correctly between the client code page, usually an ASCII or UTF-8 code page, and the EBCDIC code page that would be used by the application. So fixes for all of these problems have been put into this KIX APAR PK58721, which is a prerequisite for the support pack. So this has made some changes to the pipeline, this APAR, described on 26. So we've introduced two new control containers into the pipeline that can be specified for HTTP non-SOAP pipelines only. And so there's one container called DFH HTTP status, which is used to specify the status code to be returned in the final HTTP message. So this is the standard format of the first line of an HTTP response. So it has the HTTP release number, followed by a decimal three-digit code for the status, followed by XXXX, which is the status text, a representation of a human-readable representation of the HTTP status code. So, for instance, one of the messages that I already mentioned in the conditional put, you might want to return HTTP /1.1 /412 /precondition failed. and that is indeed one of the uses of DFH HTTP status in the CN support pack. So the other thing I said we needed to return was the media type. So the DFH media type container is a text-based thing, it's a character container, and in that you would place the media type of the data that's to be returned in the DFH response container, which is how you return the atom response back, or that's how the support pack would return it. Remember that if you're using a service routine, you would return the content in the atom content container. That would be then used to create the full atom response, which would then need to be sent back with a different media type in the DFH response container. That's a standard function of the pipeline. So the content of this container would be just the type slash subtype of the media type, where their standard media definitions, for example, and the one you would return for an atom response would be application slash atom plus XML. So that just about winds everything up. The purpose of this presentation was to show that Kix is interested in moving into the Web 2.0 technology. The support pack CA8K will show how this can be done today. It will deliver atom feeds containing Kix data. The clients can receive those requests using AJAX. The clients can receive and access Kix data using RESTful interfaces. And therefore, because using all of those technologies together, you can potentially deliver Kix data into mashups and produce a rich internet application experience for your clients. Thank you for your interest. I'll now hand you back to the operator. So thank you.
Thank you, Peter. We'd now like to ask that you participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we'll take your questions. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key, followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. For our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. We'll pause for just a moment. Question number 2, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level, press star 1, not technical enough, press star 2, or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Question number 3, do you have any plans to use Atom feeds from your CICS applications? If yes in 6 months, press star 1. If yes in 12 months, press star 2. Or if no, press star 3. And our final question today, we hope you'd enjoyed the teleconference. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And we do thank you all for your responses at this time. We'd like to take your questions. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone at this time. Once again, that is star 1 for questions, and we'll pause for just a moment. And once again, that is star one for any questions or comments that you have at this time. And Mr. Haverkan, there appear to be no questions. I'll turn the conference back to you for closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much for your attention. I had hoped you'd have some more questions, but I guess I must have satisfied all your questions about this topic. Thank you for listening. I do hope you can make use of this support pack. It's a very interesting topic, Web 2, and Kix is also very interested in it. So thank you for your interest.
That will conclude this IBM teleconference. Have a pleasant day.